This is the Week in Review for this Friday, August 23rd. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. From the sentencing of Army Private Manning for leaking classified information to the issues being raised over the murder of an Australian man who was visiting the U.S., to a proposal to raise the speed limit to 70 miles per hour in Wisconsin. We will discuss the top state, national, and international stories in the news this week with two guests from different political viewpoints. What issue in the news do you want them to discuss? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Let me welcome our guest, Jill Winicky. He is a former state senator, former chair of the Democratic Party of Wisconsin. Good morning.
Good morning. You caught me in a gulp of coffee.
Yeah, having a drink of coffee. In our Wausau studios, we have Keene Winters, financial planner from Schofield, a member of the Wausau City Council, and a member of the steering committee of the Center-Right Coalition of Wausau. Good morning, Keene.
Good morning, Joy.
Well, let's start with Syria, because it's been leading the NPR news all morning long, and President Barack Obama is calling a possible chemical weapons attack in Syria a big event of grave concern. Obama says the U.S. is still seeking confirmation that toxic gases were used in Syria, but he says such actions are very troublesome and are going to require America's attention. However, Obama says the idea that the U.S. can solve Syria's civil war is overstated. Obama had previously said that if Syria used chemical weapons, it was crossing a red line. However, he said that the U.S. was not going to rush into any sort of military action. Joe Winicky, is that the right response?
It's a little weak. The way I see it, I mean, you do have to find out a little more. I mean, this happened just in the last couple of days. But even on good news on this, even the Russians have now called for a UN investigation of this gassing. And I have a hard time believing, as the Syrian government's trying to ascertain, that the rebels would gas their own people. So, you know, I mean, hopefully we've learned the sad lessons of World War II, that you can't look the other way. And it needs a unified response from the powers that be. But he is correct in that it's not the United States on its own that can do anything about this. You have to engage the Russians. The Russians are the people that prop up the Syrian president. And it's good news for the first time that they're saying that maybe this crossed a line even for them.
So, Keene, what do you think the U.S. should do?
Well, I don't know about engaging the Russians. I mean, it's helpful, but it seems to me that our foreign policy, while it always focuses on our interest, has to have a moral center. And so when civilians are being killed with toxic gases, then there has to be a response on the United States part. And we have to, in fact, be a leader in galvanizing that response and not really sort of sitting back waiting for others to do something. And I also wish we would be articulating really what our moral center is with regard to foreign policy and these issues. What is the red line? Is it fixed-wing aircraft being used to attack civilians? Is it gassing? When does human rights component get articulated? And I'm disappointed that we're not hearing more on that subject.
To be fair, I think the president has asserted that the use of chemical weapons in Syria would cross that line. Now what you have to do, to use a term that you guys on your side always like, to quote Ronald Reagan, trust but verify. And now what we have to do is verify whether these agents were used and, in fact, potentially thousands of people died. And if they did, it requires an appropriate and firm response. But my argument is the United States can't do this alone in this region. We are not allies of Syria. The Russians are. If the Russians get involved, that helps this. And I don't think we can go it alone. I don't care whether you argue morals or anything else. We don't have a real say in Syria today.
Keene?
Well, we should be working with our Turkish allies and our European allies. And we certainly have the capability to go in there and essentially suppress the Syrian Air Force very quickly with very little risk to our forces. And so we have capabilities that we could assert. And it seems to me, though, we've gone down these inspection regimes. Can we get inspectors in? When will we get inspectors in? What did the inspectors find? At some point, you know, it just we declare some outrage, and then it peters off towards the end. And I guess people, I think I'm getting tired of it. We've had these accusations before. They haven't been fully vetted before. I see us going down that route again. I think we need to really draw a line and actually take some action.
If we know, Keen, my opinion, if we – and we have the capability of taking out the Syrian Air Force. There's no doubt about that. But if we do that, all of a sudden you will inflame even more than we have inflamed in the last 10 years, Iran, Syria, the UAE. Turkey has been an ally, but they haven't been a very close ally recently, and the Russians. And we're not the only player over there.
Well, we certainly should go in with allies. I agree with you on that, Joe. We certainly shouldn't do it alone, but we should be pulling people together to do this. And, you know, it cuts both ways. If you stand by while civilians are being slaughtered, certainly those people on the ground who are being murdered and treated unfairly, essentially defenseless, they look to you and say, the United States, and say, you have no moral center. You always claim the moral high ground, and where is your moral center? Why are you standing by when these atrocities happen? So, you know, there are, can you intervene without creating problems? But can you stand by without creating problems? You know, it's a messy situation. But at some point, we really need to declare what our moral center is and be the source for galvanizing action and not more of this lead from behind.
Yeah. Without rushing to judgment.
Yeah. We should move on now to Egypt. President Obama on CNN said that cutting off aid to Egypt may not reverse what the interim government does, but he says the U.S. must be very careful about being seen as aiding and abetting the actions that run contrary to the country's values. The Obama administration is weighing whether or not to cut off more than $1 billion in annual aid to Egypt after the military-backed interim government cracked down on supporters of ousted President Mohamed Morsi. So, Keen, what do you think we should do?
Well, it's a difficult situation, but let's be clear. The aid that we provide to the Egyptian military is our influence with the Egyptian military, and that influence has been really the linchpin of peace in the Middle East since Anwar Sadat and Menachem Begin got together with Jimmy Carter and declared peace. And so we have to be very careful on that, and there's a good place where we have behind-the-scenes leverage, and I think we should be using that behind-the-scenes leverage to gather peace.
Joe?
Just going to shock Keen. I agree with him. I think what's going on in Egypt for 35 years, what has helped keep the peace with Israel and has helped keep peace in the Middle East until our ill-fated incursion into Iraq was the fact that the Egyptian people, 150 million strong, were the great buffer of the Middle East, and we should not throw that away. I mean, we don't have a good choice in Egypt. I mean, the Islamic Brotherhood is no friend of the United States. The military at times has been friendly, but we also believe in democracy. So we should tread carefully there. And I think for all the grief the president has taken on this, I don't think his actions have been bad at all.
I'm Joy Cardine talking with Joe Winicky and Keen Winters during this edition of our Week in Review. If you'd like to join us to talk about the top stories in the news this week or to add one to our plate, 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Well, let's move on to Bradley Manning now, who wants to be called Chelsea from now on, but we'll get to that a little bit later. Manning was sentenced to 35 years in military prison for leaking classified information to WikiLeaks. First off, Joe, your reaction to that sentence?
He entered the military voluntarily. We don't have a draft. He knew what the rules were. He violated them. He pays the price.
Mm-hmm.
The sentence could have been even worse. It could have been life imprisonment. And I don't even care what gender he wants to be. I have a transgender family member. That doesn't matter to me. Yeah. But when it comes down to it, he knew the rules. He violated them. That's the code of conduct of the military.
Keen, your reaction.
I think it's interesting to contrast that to the Sergeant Bales trial going on right now, where Sergeant Bales, of course, committed the heinous act of murdering civilians, but he's genuinely remorseful for him. No, there's no question that he snapped under pressure, but he's owning up to it. He's taking responsibility for it. Bradley Manning or his family really accept no responsibility, and they really are trying to sort of confuse this issue of being a whistleblower. If you're a whistleblower and you find a particular thing that's being done wrong and you release the information on it, that's one thing. But he released scads and scads, millions of pieces of information that he certainly could not have read beforehand, doing damage to diplomats in the field, putting soldiers at risk. I mean, I just don't think any sentence could have been too stiff for the real betrayal and the life risk that he caused, and probably life loss to members of the United States Diplomatic Corps and Military Corps in the field serving their country. So I just have no sympathy for him at all.
And it's an odd mix, Joy, of the right, the far right and the far left that want to make Bradley Manning a martyr. I'm not one of them.
Well, some supporters are starting an online petition to ask President Obama to pardon him.
I won't sign it.
You're not going to sign that. So
neither will I.
Do you think there's any chance that he would be pardoned?
No.
Keen?
No, I don't think so either.
All right. Well, Manning did also reveal yesterday that he is transgender, that he wants to live as a woman. He wants to be called Chelsea from now on, and wants to begin hormone therapy as soon as possible. The Army says it does not provide sex change or hormone treatment coverage. Should it, Joe Winnicke?
I don't know. I never really thought about it. I know in certain prison settings that happens, where some prisoners receive hormone therapy and other treatments. I don't know. I've never thought about it.
Keen?
How's that for a non-answer?
No, that's all right. Keen?
Well, I think once we get to the prison sentence, no, I wouldn't support using taxpayer dollars for that. If you want to make that choice later on your own, to the extent that he does get out, he can do that then. But we're not going to play those kind of games in the prison setting.
Well, we have a caller who's online. Rhonda in Green Bay is with us. Hello, Rhonda.
Hello.
Yes. What is your point or question?
I'm listening to the conversation about Syria, and one of your guests had referenced the fact that we have a moral responsibility that we should be looked at to lead and take a stand. And what comes to mind for me is, how are we supposed to be taken seriously when in our own country we're not able to take care of our own children that are being slaughtered? I would think a lot of people at this point are going to look at us for leadership because of that very point.
Yeah, and what do you mean our own children being slaughtered, Rhonda?
I guess there's always this mass response to innocent children being killed in this world, but when it comes to our own children with gunfire, for example, we have, I guess, every excuse in the book to not do something about it.
Well, a reaction to that, Joe?
Well, I mean, those are criminal acts, and our laws say they're criminal acts, and that does not preclude some people from, creating crimes. I don't think America's perfect by any means, but I also believe we are the last great superpower in the world, and we do have, I don't like to use the term moral authority, but I think we have the power and the resources to help deal with these issues, not unilaterally as we seem to try to do in the second Gulf War, unlike the first, but I don't make the same equation. I mean, we're not perfect by any means, but sometimes when you, you know, I mean, we have as much defense firepower as the rest of the world combined, I guess. Sometimes we have to lead by example. I'm not sure where we go with Syria yet, but I don't equate it to some of the real tragedies that do happen in this country of 300 million people.
Mm-hmm. Keen?
I agree. I think no one on the right or the left sees the actions, whether they be a mass shooting or a single shooting, as acceptable in any way. Those are criminal acts. Those are deplorable acts, and we treat them as such. We may not always have good solutions for preventing them, and we can debate the solutions for preventing them, but nobody is in a position where they think they shouldn't be prevented. And so I think there's wide agreement that those are criminal acts. And I agree with Joe. Really, human rights has always been sort of a centerpiece of America's moral authority in the world and foreign policy. And one of the things you can have is there are many states that now take aid from the Chinese. Why? Because the Chinese don't have any human rights checkoffs when they're receiving aid. And that's the thing that sets the – and neither do the Russians. And that's what sets the United States apart. It's why democracy is actually growing around the world. Certainly since World War II, there have been more democracies created than there have been dictatorships. And we should stay the course on having that kind of a moral center.
Keen Winters is a financial planner from Schofield, a member of the Wausau City Council, a member of the steering committee of the Center-Right Coalition of Wausau. And Joe Winicky is a former state senator and former chair of the Democratic Party of Wisconsin. They are our two guests today for our regular Friday Week in Review. Coming up, as the Week in Review continues, we're going to talk about a potential mass shooting in Georgia being averted by a school staff member who talked the shooter into giving himself up. And we'll also talk about a very sad case in Oklahoma. An Australian athlete who was visiting in Oklahoma was murdered by three teens. The teens say they were bored and they did it for the fun of it. It has one Australian politician calling for a boycott of the U.S. until it has adequate gun control. It has some conservatives turning this into a racial issue. We'll talk about that and more coming up as the Week in Review continues here on the Ideas Network. This is the Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine, talking today to Joe Winicky and Keen Winters about the top state, national, and international news of the week. We have an open line for you if you have an issue from the news this week that you would like to discuss. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. So two teenage boys are charged with first-degree murder in Oklahoma in the random killing of an Australian baseball player. A third was charged with being an accessory. Apparently, the baseball player was jogging, and the teens, who said that they were bored, shot him for the fun of it. So, Keen Winters, what was your initial reaction to hearing this news?
Well, it's certainly a shocking and deplorable event. It really rocks you to the core that we can have children who do these kinds of things. And no matter what their condition in life, it really there's no excuse for doing it. And there has been some conservative, I don't go out there and just bang on the table about this. But given that it was an international incident, I think that begs a comment from the president. I think it's an opportunity for the president, too, to stand up as a father figure to young black men and say, you know, let's look at what's happening here and what it says about us and where we want to go, what it is as a role model, what his aspirations are for young black men, and to really give us a comment on this issue.
Joe.
Well, one of the alleged perpetrators was white. When the president did this very thing that Keene just asked in the Trayvon Martin case, he was loudly ridiculed by the right of, in this country. And, you know, and I go back to the earlier caller, I think her name was Rhonda from Green Bay. Don't think I'm not sympathetic about her concerns about guns. I mean, the fact that a portion of her society blamed a 17-year-old kid who went to get iced tea and Skittles and was shot in the heart, and then the guy got off, and people wonder about America. This isn't the president's moment. When the president tried to point out that he could have been Trayvon Martin, all he got was ridiculed by the Limbaughs of the world. This is not the same case. This is a horrific incident by some punk kids. And, you know, we'll learn more. I mean, one of the hard parts about today's conversation, Joy, is so much of it is so new.
Yeah,
we don't know many of the details on these in Syria or this case or the like. What we know is there were three kids. They were apprehended. And an innocent guy jogging got killed, just like an innocent black kid from Florida got, you know, was shot for getting some stuff for his girlfriend.
Yeah, initially, some bloggers were saying all three involved in this shooting were black, but it has since come out.
Yeah,
that
well, one
was
of
white.
On the picture that was out there, the kid who's Caucasian, you know, he's tanned and you know he could pass for a variety of things, but this is not a black on white crime. But you know, when it was a white on black crime, oh, the world ended.
Well, there is an Australian politician is saying that other Australians should boycott the U.S., not come here, in essence, until the country has adequate gun control.
They'll be waiting a long time in this country. All we do is pass more and more right. How many ways do you have to own a machine gun, an Uzi, a half track, and a tank?
Keen.
Well, I support Second Amendment rights. And if you're opposed to that, I think you should be working on changing the Constitution, not reinterpreting the Constitution. I think reinterpreting the Constitution is a slippery slope, and Americans have the right to bear arms to defend themselves. I think the Australian politician is certainly must come from a left-wing portion of their political system and is pandering to a base. And I don't take it as much more than that as pandering to a base. And people will still continue to come. America is a safe country.
Oh, you mean that real clarified Second Amendment about a well-regulated militia? Yeah, we have a lot of militias left in the country. When we have them, we usually put them in jail like the Posse Comitatus.
Well, let's talk about this potential mass shooting in Georgia that was averted by this bookkeeper at the school. she talked the shooter into giving himself up. Some have pointed out that she did not need to be armed to stop this this potential mass shooting.
But she had to have courage.
Yeah, she sure did. Keen, your reaction to this incident?
Well, I think it's certainly a happy story, an inspiring story, and congratulations to her for having the courage and, you know, but quite frankly, for having there is a bit of good fortune in here that it worked out, and there certainly was no guarantee that it would work out. And when it comes to these things, I think moral courage is something to be applauded. And going back to our previous, I'd like to see the president show a little moral courage in talking about these issues.
Yeah.
Well, he did talk to her yesterday. She was getting her hair done to go on Good Morning America or something. But the president talked to her. And, you know, the president can't be all things to all people. And in this polarized society, he gets ridiculed for many things that he's not deserved of. But, my gosh, how many people have to either be shot or could be shot in a school setting before we start saying this scourge of automatic weapons and lack of mental illness coordination and the like? It's got to end. How many kids do we have to lose every year? And then, of course, who remembers Sandy Hook already?
Well, let's move on. We're running short on time. We have let's go to the state of Wisconsin since we're talking about law enforcement issues to some extent. First, Joe Winicky, what do you make of this news that the Capitol Police Chief Irwin was transferred into some sort of ghost job or fake job in order to give him a double-digit raise in salary?
Well, I spent a couple years working in the Office of State Employment Relations, so I know a little bit of what I speak on this. This is not normal. And it sure looks like, oh, let's reward the guy for being a toughie. You know, I mean, just this thought that we handcuff people for singing. And, you know, this is like a police state over there. I haven't made my first appearance, but it's coming because I'm one of those that was getting bored a little bit by the Solidarity Singers. And frankly, I don't care if they want to go get a permit or not, but now that they've upped the ante, and now we're arresting 14-year-olds and members of the press and the clergy over singing a song at noon, this guy doesn't deserve a raise. He deserves to be fired.
Police chief being transferred into the ghost job and then getting the raise, Keene, anything wrong with that?
Well, I think he's done a difficult job. In a difficult circumstances, he is now getting paid what his predecessor got paid. We do call it a double-digit raise, but it's a 12% raise. I mean, in terms of the type of year that he is, or past 3 years that he's had, in terms of performance, sometimes people need a merit increase, and sometimes the civil service is very boxy and doesn't handle those things very well. I think it's an awkward procedure that happened. But I would also say, you know, Joe, you got to come out state a little bit and understand that the Capitol Singers, not only are they boring people, but people think it's ridiculous that they can't get permits. And this constantly wasting the taxpayers' dollars by essentially baiting the police into having to arrest them. But also, it really is difficult for law enforcement. People don't want to cuff people and take them away. That's not a fun thing for them to do. And these people are constantly in their face provoking it. It's really getting tiresome. And you got to get out of Madison more and understand in the rest of the state, this just doesn't play well. You really ought to end it.
Oh, that's nice. Now, first of all, you know, earlier you had mentioned the Second Amendment, and then you should just change it. Well, what about the First Amendment and the amendment, I think it's Article 1, Section 4 of the Wisconsin Constitution about the state capitol, and it is a place where people have a right to speak. So this notion, I mean, and by the way, 3 years ago, Charlie Tubbs was the Capitol Chief of Police, and he actually dealt with 150,000 protesters and did it well, and what he got out of it was kicked out. And the notion that this guy who comes in creates a police state, I can't believe the Capitol Police like doing this. I agree with you on that. And then, within 1 year, makes the same amount of money that Charlie Tubbs made after 10 is wrong. And what you're also forgetting, sir, is that we have 100,000 or so public employees in this state who've gotten a 1% raise in 5 years, and they deeply resent this guy getting a 12% raise because he did Scott Walker's bidding.
So, Joe, what should happen with the Capitol protest? The administration is saying, hey, you know, the judge says we can enforce this rule if more than 20 people gather without a permit.
Well, one thing, if I remember right, and I might not be right on this, but I think I am, is that the judge has still got this case under advisement, and he may not like this police state that's gotten in there. I mean, I'm not quite sure why they just don't every day go get a permit until they finally say, the Capitol Police say, oh, we didn't really want you to get a permit, and then they start arresting him anyway. But you know, that's their call, and, you know, it's not my call. And I don't understand for a second how a 14-year-old child who's with their parents gets arrested and handcuffed because they're, what did you say, Keene? A thug or something? Or they're just nasty or mean or in their face? No, they're not. They're singing.
All right, Keene, so
I'll weigh in on this because I'm on a city council. We issue permits all the time. Permits are – you have – absolutely agree with your free speech rights. But when you have a gathering of people, and we're working municipally, we have to make sure if it's a large enough gathering, that we have fire and ambulance ready and to go. We might have to make sure that we have enough members of the police on staff, and they're available to break up any problems that might happen when one group is saying one thing and other people don't agree. It's a public health and safety issue that you get a permit. Get the doggone permit, and you can sing all you want. Well, and they're deliberately not getting the permit to force the arrest.
Well, the gang that couldn't shoot straight over there, the Walker administration, this thing was petering out. There were 15, 20 people tops going to this thing. Now there's 300 to 500 going almost every day. So really nice work if you were trying to stop it.
Yeah, the protesters will say, the participants in the solidarity sing-along will say that they are participants. There's no formal group, Keene, and if they show up to sing, they don't know if 20 or more people are going to show up, and that if somebody takes out a permit, that they'd be held liable if there should be some damage or something, and they don't think that they should have to ask the government permission to protest the government.
Again, getting permits is a public health and safety issue. It's a practical issue. Someone should be organizing things, and someone should take the responsibility. If I have an event on this public square in Wausau, we call it the 400 block, no one knows how many people are going to show up. In fact, we have people come and say, you know, it's the first time we're doing this. I don't know what the attendance would be. But somebody takes responsibility as the organizer, gets the permits, lets us know who's going to be there, why they're going to be there, and then we deploy the appropriate public resources to make sure that people are safe. And again, this is deliberately provocative by the singers. They're trying to force the arrest. And really, Joe, it just doesn't play well outside.
Do you really
Madison.
Think they're trying to get arrested?
I do.
Oh, God.
Well, let's go to Mark.
But, Joe, probably everybody outside of Madison thinks that, too. And
oh,
you guys
I know.
Think
it's
that.
The People's Republic of Madison and the rest of you guys. By the way, I've never lived in Madison in my life.
Verona, right? Mark in Appleton is with us. Hello, Mark.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. It's my understanding that part of the permit process and the reason people are reluctant to get them is because there are liability issues that are written into the permit, and they're kind of making them responsible for anything that happens anywhere or something. And that's why there's the resistance to getting the permit. And this really does seem to me a huge much ado about nothing, and I don't understand people singing for an hour in the Capitol, how that could impact on government processes. And again, going back to the chief of police, as a state worker, I not only have gotten 1% raise in the last 5 years, I took a 7% pay cut.
Yes, you did.
In my take-home pay.
Yeah. Thank you, Mark. Well, let's wrap this conversation up and maybe get both of you a take on whether you think Keene, is this, are the arrests, is this crackdown going to hurt Governor Walker politically or help him?
I don't think it has any effect. I think it's small ball in the grand scheme of things.
Mm-hmm. Joe?
Well, for the governor supporters, you got to remember this state's so polarized. I mean, the governor has a 52% cap and probably a 45% base bottom. So for the people that like him, oh, crack down, crack some heads, give them raises, forget about everything else. And the people that don't like him, this is just one more reason why they don't like Scott Walker and his authoritarian rule. Although I think he's having fun in Tennessee and Alabama tonight.
We'll talk about that as the Week in Review continues. But right now, let's quickly talk about a proposal that's in the state legislature now to raise the speed limit in Wisconsin to 70 miles per hour on the interstates in Wisconsin and other certain highways, probably Highway 41.
Probably the four-lane expressways,
yeah.
The U.S. highways.
So do you think that's a good idea, Joe?
I didn't even vote for 65, but I've come to the conclusion that cars are so much safer now. The roads are so much better. Every state around us is 70. I can go 72, so it's okay.
Is it okay with you, Keene?
I'd say, what's the rush? I'd need to see some data. on why it's a good idea. But Joe's right about some things. Cars are safer. Roads are safer. And what we have netted out of that is an increasing or a decreasing death toll on the highway. You know, it used to be it was pretty regular that more than 1,000 Wisconsin citizens died in car accidents, and that's not true in a given year, and that's not true anymore. And by the way, the fact that that's not true helps us all out in our insurance rates. And you know, I've driven in those other states, so if I'm going from Rockford to Bloomington Normal, from Chicago to St. Louis, from La Crosse to Sioux Falls, from Minneapolis to Fargo, that's an entire – or, for, you know, from Dubuque to Council Bluffs, that's an entirely different terrain. And so just because they're 70, I don't know that we need to be 70 here unless you could show me some economic benefit. Because and think of it, too – we're entering a time where we have an aging population, more older drivers on the road. They have reduced reaction time, as we all do when we get older. Really, is this a good idea? I just don't see it yet.
The most boring drive in America is from Rockford to Bloomington. Unless you like windmills.
I'm interested in how you guys are responding to this. It's a Republican representative. Paul Tittle,
I think,
of Manitowoc, who is the sponsor of this. The Republican Assembly Leader, Robin Voss, is backing it. The Senate isn't so sure this is a priority, but it seems...
What does Scott Fitzgerald's dad, what was his title? He's the State Patrol head.
Oh, is that what's going on?
I'm sure Daddy said to Scotty, well, I'm not sure we need to go up. Saying that, Mr. Tittle or Tuttle or whatever his name is, he's got to come up with a better argument than this will just free up more free time so people can spend with their families. That's kind of weak.
Yeah, he said you could get to a place faster.
5 miles an hour faster? Yeah. So in an hour you save 5 minutes? Oh, come on. You got to do better than that, Mr. Tuttle or Tittle.
So right.
We've all been on the highway where you've either had someone pass you, and by the time you get to the off-ramp, particularly happens to me on the Wausau Drive to Green Bay, someone will pass me, and, you know, there are two cars ahead of me at the stoplight going into Green Bay, and I'm like, well, yay for that.
you don't save that much. You don't save that much.
Well, we will move on, and coming up on the Week in Review, it's the Week in Review quiz. We'll talk about some education issues. We'll talk about Governor Walker saying he agrees with the effort to make private and public schools adhere to the same standards. Representative Peter Barca talking about public school parents seemingly satisfied with their public schools since so few of them have applied for vouchers to go to private schools, and other issues in the news. I'm Joy Cardine, talking today to Joe Winicky, a former state senator, former chair of the Democratic Party of Wisconsin, and Keen Winters, who is a member of the Wausau City Council and a member of the steering committee of the Center-Right Coalition of Wausau. This is the Week in Review here on the Ideas Network. This is the Week in Review on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Time now for the Week in Review quiz. There's a new addition to the first family, and it's another dog. The White House says the Obamas have welcomed this new dog on Monday, and our question is, what is the dog's name? What is the dog's name? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. We'll give you about 5 minutes to call in or email in your answer. We'll randomly select a winner from all of the correct answers and offer the winner a book that we have featured on the program recently. So what is the name of the Obama's new dog? That's the Week in Review quiz. Talking today with Joe Winicky and Keen Winters about the news of the week. And let's talk a little bit about some education issues. New ACT scores are in, and they show that Wisconsin is still the second highest in the nation, tied with Iowa. Our average score was 22.1 out of 36. The national average was 20.9. So, Keen Winters, what do you say about those numbers? What do they mean, that we're still second?
Well, I think we're doing well. People would like to see a little progress made every year, but the fact that they're essentially dead on what last year is, that we're ranked second, I don't see anything to complain about.
Joe?
It's standardized test scores. I don't think they mean very much. My daughter graduated magna cum laude, an outstanding senior in her major at Winona State. She couldn't even get into some Wisconsin schools because of the ACT, because she wasn't a good test taker. What does it mean? I don't know.
All right, Governor Walker says that he agrees with an effort to make private and public schools adhere to the same standards. We had Senator Luther Olson on our state capitol report this past Monday talking about how he says that private schools, the voucher schools, need to be held accountable too. Joe, does that surprise you that the governor agrees with him?
I don't think he means it. I think that's lip service. At the end of the day, what these guys have done to the public school system, first by the almost $1.6 billion cut in the first 2 years of the budget, and then the middle school increase in the second 2 years, followed by vouchers where two-thirds of the money is going to people that were already out of the public school system, which means it's just a drain. Luther said this, I heard him on your show, that it'll just be a drain on the public coffer. And the one that nobody talks about is the new $30 million private parochial school tax credit that got thrown in there. We're just creating a two-tiered educational system, one for those who can afford to go to private or parochial schools and the rest who go to the public school. And we can't afford that.
Can we afford that, Keen?
I think we can afford that. I think we need to have school choice. And I disagree with the premise that right now there are two school systems. You just have to be rich enough to go to the other school system. We should extend through school vouchers that ability to have choice to those people who don't necessarily have the means. And I think the governor is certainly dead serious about giving parents not only the choice, but the tools to evaluate the difference between those schools. And then you have a system where you can have innovation and competition and really, instead of a bureaucracy that moves slowly. We've had a bureaucracy, a big educational bureaucracy since 1960, and we've fallen behind the world. We need more innovation in education. Up here in Wausau, we have a place called the Storefront Learning Center, and founded in 1972 by North Central Community Action, staffed with VISTA volunteers at its very beginning. What it has helped is high school kids that fall through the cracks, because of financial or social problems at home, simply are just can't make it in the bureaucracy or the social cauldron of the modern high school. And unfortunately, at the end of this year, the Storefront Learning School is going to close. Vouchers came too little, too late. They're going to graduate there between 9 to 11 more students. They've helped hundreds. Some have even come back to this area as teachers. That's the kind of innovative program that saved kids, that deserve vouchers, and we need more of. And we're not going to have that unless we have a voucher system to fund them.
Wait a second. This school survived for 40 years without vouchers. Now it's because vouchers came, it's closing? I don't get that.
Look,
I don't get the argument.
It has had a decrease in funding. It had federal block grant funding. It had United Way funding, and they've lost their federal funding, and they were going to close in June. The community foundations came up with a little more money to keep them open to the end of the year, but the school systems have gotten in on the act. They did receive a little bit of money from the schools. That's also tightened up, and so they have run out of funding.
I failed to make the connection with vouchers.
Well, if they had essentially a $7,000 voucher for the number of 20 kids that they had, well, they would be in the neighborhood of $130,000 to $140,000 more or a year, and it would be a going concern.
Directly out of the Wausau School District's budget.
Yes.
Well, along
and
those
the
lines.
And the DC Everett School District.
Assembly Minority Leader Peter Barca says that 99% of public school students and their parents opted to stay in public schools following the expansion of the vouchers system. He says that voucher expansion is proving to be an expensive subsidy for private school students at the expense of public schools, and that taxpayers have no choice. How do you respond to that, Keen?
Well, I think it's a lot of hyperbole. So there are a million K through 12 kids in the state. You have added in this system, this budget, 500 vouchers available in the first year, 1,000 vouchers available in the second year. It's just frankly immaterial to the entire funding of public schools, and those people who screech loudly and say that it is are completely distorting the numbers.
Well, while Peter's statement is a little bit of hyperbole since there was a 500-person cap, the reality is that this is not a drop in the bucket. There was more money put in the two-year state budget into private and parochial schools than there was into the public schools. Now, there's 800,000, not a million, but 800,000 public school kids who got less money than those 500 kids and the number of people who got the $30 million in tuition tax credits. So there is a shift. It's away from the public schools. And I yet to have seen these vouchers and private schools start taking all those kids with special needs. So what's going to happen is the best and the brightest going to cherry pick into these really fancy places, and the public school system's going to be left with the rest. Now, that doesn't mean public school system's going to die. It just means that it's going to even be tougher for them.
Let's talk briefly about President Obama calling for a new government rating system for colleges that would judge schools on their affordability and perhaps be used to allocate federal aid. In a speech yesterday, President Obama gave the University of Wisconsin's Flex degree a shout out. The UW system is set to begin this fall, allowing people to prove what they know from real-world experience or previous coursework through online courses in order to get a degree. Is that a good idea? Is that a model for the nation, Joe Winicky?
Oh, maybe, but, I mean, to be fair, I don't pick on the president on this show, but this time, and I know it's the University of Wisconsin and everything else, we haven't even started the program. Can't we see if it works or not first?
Keen?
Well, you know, that particular program, I would appreciate the shout out. But I think, you know, this is an interesting debate because inflation in higher education, you know, as a financial planner, and when I talk to parents about planning for college, it's been higher than the regular rate of inflation. We are in a position where in this country we spend about twice as much per student in higher education as our nearest competitors, and we're not sure that we necessarily get a superior result. And so then the question is in oftentimes when you have big, you know, we spend what, $150 billion federal dollars on this program a year, the question is, are we just sending the money out? And what kind of accountability is there? So I'm open to a discussion about
unless it's DPI.
We're almost just very quickly
on accountability, and accountability to me is whether students are educated in professions that ultimately get them good jobs.
Well, you just said the bureaucracy over there, Madison, at DPI and stuff. So I just wanted to make sure you were consistent.
Well, we will have to leave it there for the content of the show today because we have just a minute to go. We need to congratulate Diana LaCrosse. She's the winner of the Week in Review quiz. We asked, what is the name of the Obama's new dog? The name is Sunny, and she is a one-year-old Portuguese water dog, just like Bo, and we are told she is full of energy and very affectionate. And I also read that that Bo and Sunny are getting along famously. So, Joe, are you a dog person, a cat
Absolutely.
Person?
Absolutely. Bernie and Gracie, Burns and Allen, Bernie and Gracie, my Bernese Mountain Dog Collie and my Golden Retriever are probably fighting right now in my living room.
I love the names. That is wonderful.
Well, actually, my daughter, her future husband's got allergies, so this was a surprise second dog.
Oh, very neat. And Keen, what about you? Dog, cat person, neither?
More of a dog person. My in-laws have a dog. And that's how we get our dog fixes, is that Sammy comes over and visits.
And I have Lady, a dog, and Ray, a cat. So I'll do both. Thanks to both of you for being with us. Keen Winters is a financial planner from Schofield, a member of the Wausau City Council, and also on the steering committee for the Center-Right Coalition in Wausau. And Joe Winicky is a former state senator, former chair of the Democratic Party of Wisconsin. Thanks to Bill Martins and to Christy Taylor for producing the program. Have a good weekend. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.